The Speaking of the Past Oral History Project, 1984, Blue Mountains, New South Wales. This tape forms part of a collection of recordings on the oral past. Each tape contributes to a developing story of life in the Blue Mountains. It is understood that the Blue Mountain City Library will, at the discretion of the librarian, allow students and researchers or any other interested persons to listen to the tapes and read the summaries and use them in conjunction with their research or other educational purposes. It is further understood that no copies of the tapes may be made and nothing can be used from them in any published form without acknowledgement of the original source.
Yes.
Now I can't forget that.
Good, that's a wonderful...
What I wanted to tell you was the significance of the Mark tree in the the workings of the men from the various clubs that had to do with the relationship with the
You mentioned that the Mark tree was very important because...
Yes, I know, I'm coming up to it, but I can't think of the body I'm working for.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh. That mightn't be as important as what you're going to tell me.
Oh, it is, because that's the start of everything. The whole conservation in the whole of Australia starts with that. The Mountain Trails Club was formed in Johnson Street, Annandale, after Miles Dunphy had to leave Kiama, where he had previously lived for 4 years. The reason being that his father wished to work in with the clothing houses in Sydney. So he had to come to Sydney and go to various places in the country where these clothing houses had branches. If he were running his own business, as he did for several years, during Dunphy's youth, he would be called a draper.
I see.
Although what he would develop and what he would sell would be clothing.
Finished articles of clothing.
Articles of clothing for men and children, men, women and children, that's right. Now, if he followed or went to the various towns where there were mines, I can't think of the big one in central Queensland.
Mount Isa?
No.
Kathleen?
No, it's the biggest, it's the best known of all the mountain towns in Queensland.
No.
God, that's what I'm up against, you see.
Your father left Kiama
No.
And went to the city store.
No, this is long before he was married.
Oh, I see.
He was, when he left Kiama, could I put it another way? I'll start another way and I'll try and track me memories this way.
Yes.
My father left Ireland, South Ireland, in 1881. And he came out to Australia, like hundreds and hundreds of other Irishmen, English and Scotsmen. And he came out here to benefit himself, like these people from the old Dart used to do. Now, he wandered through the country by himself. He had no mate. And in his roamings, he made a particular interest of Queensland, because he must have realised that Queensland had a lot of promise. Now, what he saw in Queensland were places where mining was carried on, in some cases coal mining, other places gold mining, and so on. But he was not interested in any of that mining at all. He was interested in the miners. as individuals, as users of a power, because his job was the supply of a power for human beings. So in order to do that, he had to have communication with the houses in Brisbane possibly, but certainly those in Sydney, which may have been warehouses, who supplied these things, brought them into the country, and then gave them to travellers and so on who wished to send them all over the various states, wherever they happened to be. Now, on one occasion, Dunphy was taken down by his father, down into one of the streets in Sydney, not far from Circular Quay. And there, as a matter of interest to a boy, he was only four or so, as a matter of interest to a boy, he was taken into a warehouse and he was shown something that nearly made his eyes pop out. That was a case about 3 or 4 feet square, empty, and sitting in the warehouse, in the centre of a warehouse floor, and it was filled with velveteen caps. Velvet or velveteen caps, not sure, it wouldn't matter. And they're all of the one colour, that's to say, some are green, some are blue, some are ruby, some are yellow. And he thought this was, and it possibly was, the best thing he had ever seen up to that time. It interested the boy's mind. And before he left, he was given a cap. It's a present to himself, as a cap. That was all right. Which brings us back to an interview which took place in a street in Melbourne before the Dunphy family left South Melbourne to come to New South Wales. In the street in flat South Melbourne, don't forget the flat, brick pavements, he was held up, accosted if you like, by a gentleman who had auburn hair, was somewhat rotund, and his buggy, sulky, was all newly painted. The spokes were red and yellow, and so on. It was done up beautifully. And his father was stopped with the boy, and it turned out that the gentleman with the auburn hair was a friend of Dunphy's the father. He was a friend of the father's. Now, he and the father had a conversation on the pavement about business, while the boy just looked around. Then, having finished that conversation, the boy was taken down into this warehouse where he saw all these caps and was given one. I think it was a blue, I'm not sure. I hope I didn't contradict myself. I think it was blue. That's right. That brings me back to the warehouse again.
You wanted to start to talk from the marked tree and how important that was, because it marks the track.
I'll stop these reminiscences, which are very old to me, well, at the age of four, in Melbourne.
They're a long time back.
And I am going to transfer my remarks, my mind, my memory, to Katoomba in the Blue Mountains. What I'm going to speak about now is what occurred at different times on the road from Katoomba towards Blackheath, westward. Towards Blackheath, that is, westward. But what was found out on these occasions, and there were several, was that Nellie's Glen, the pass called Nellie's Glen, the entrance into which is in several places, one main one of which is near the Mark Tree. Nellie's Glen was one of the main passes in the whole of the Blue Mountains system. In other words, and it crossed, by the way, it crossed the main Western Road.
What can you remember it being used for?
The main Western Road was used for traffic in the daylight hours. But there was a dearth of traffic in the night hours because motor cars were not in fashion. They were not used. But there was plenty of other traffic, mostly cart and so on and so forth, and all horseback travel and so on and so forth. The main Western Road right across the Blue Mountains was in constant use ever since it was first used in about 1803, 1804, something like that, when the first visit was made to the site of what became Bathurst later on. And the Western Road, one way and another, crossed all the tracks or all means of access from the south side valleys to the north side valleys along that road. It's a hard thing, difficult thing to describe. But by making a point about the one at Nellie's Glen, perhaps it would typify any one of them at all. What a lot of people never realise is that on one side, the north side of the Great Western Road, so called, is one of the greatest canyons in the whole of this continent. The Canyon of the Gross River. It's about 2,000 feet deep. There are various lookouts to which one can go from off the Western Road, which is on the southern side of that canyon, and in some cases some miles away, some cases nearer to it, can go to the southern side, and if one is on the Great Northern Road, which goes from Windsor, Richmond, and up a tall mountain, I've forgotten the name.
Carrajong.
North Carrajong, yes, up towards Carrajong. Up towards Carrajong, that's quite right. Of course, later on, all these places became well known to what were commonly called walkers or bushwalkers.
Mr. Dunphy, what are your best recollections of the incidents that happened in the Gross Valley with the Blue Gum Forest? Can you recall the events that led to the saving of the Blue Gum Forest?
Yes, I can. The events are so many. They're not rare, but there's so many that it's hard to say how to put them in order. For instance, two mates of mine and myself went out from Katooba and we walked around to Blackheath and we took the tracks out along the Grouse. We took the cliffs along the Grouse. We went through a rubbish tip in one case and followed along the edge of a cliff which fell over into the Gross River. And when we got to a certain point, we were in the vicinity of a place which a gentleman named Judge Docker, years before, good many years before, had discovered Docker's Ladder down into the Gross River, and by wading the Gross, the Blue Gum Forest. It's quite an adventure. quite an experience. It's quite a matter to talk about. But one of the last trips I did, and that's a good many years ago, was up there, and with two other mates, I walked from Katoomba along the road out by this rubbish tip on the edge of the grouse and came back along the edge of the grouse where there was a war relic, a machine gun placed on a base made of cemented stone fragments. And I heard later that machine gun was thrown over the edge down into the valley about 2,000 feet down below. But I don't know any more about that. I hope it didn't occur, but I think it did. But we went along still further from where that machine gun once was mounted, and we came to a lookout. I'm trying to think of the name. Well, we're opposite what's the big Dun Mountain? Mount Banks.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we're opposite Mount Banks, the Grouse Canyon being between us. And from this lookout, which was named, and I can't think of the name, we three could look out across the Great Valley to Mount Banks. And we knew that along Mount Banks, then along the top, working along the top, on that other side was the Great North Road, which went right across from Kurrajong, Richmond Kurrajong, to Lithgow. But if one went to Mount York by the Great Western Road, to try and do that, he would have to walk about or travel somehow along a road called the
Bell's Road.
No, it's a road that turned at right angles from Mount York and went north for about 10 or 12 miles. And the railway line went alongside of it on the left hand or north side. Or west side, that's right. And if you got to the end of that long range, I used to know the name but I've forgotten it now, you would come to the other road, which was the Great North Road, which linked in with Bell's Road. And the two of them went down westward over the edge of the range on a new made road when I first was on it and down into Lithgow.
When you were in the Grouse, can you tell us what the Blue Gum Forest was like when you first came upon it?
When the Bushwalkers came into being in about 1927 or so, they had a self-inflicted job, if you like, self-imposed job to make various places safe for the people. And one of those places was the road across the northern Blue Mountains, the one that comes down into Lithgow. And the time that I went along it, the road had just been made and was in good condition. And I was able to go off that road northward, but not very far because there were other roads, the creeks they were called, but I've forgotten their names, which came up into the country and prevented any access from the road that goes over this part of the Blue Mountains to the northern part of the Blue Mountains. You couldn't do the piece in between, not easily at any rate. You might find your way through, and I think on one occasion some of us did. But the point is that the Blue Gum Forest was discovered by walkers going down the river, which leaves I suppose by parties of walkers going down from the other end of the valley. That doesn't mean Mount York, it means nearer Lithgow than Mount York.
How long?
In contact with the old Great Northern Road. And people would go down there, and I know that the railway line goes along that piece of road between Mount York and the Great North Road. That piece of road is 10 to 12 miles long, and the railway parallels the western face of that all the way, then turns at the other end and goes over and into the valley below and down to Lithgow.
You had a lot of influence on conservation in the early years of this century.
Yes.
Can you give some idea of what the general attitudes to your efforts were in those times? How were you?
Conservation has always been mixed up with what one might call bushwalking. Because bushwalking had as one of its useful national points the protection of things useful to the public, especially scenery and places to go to. And that goes without saying. It's quite commonplace. Now, I'm trying to link up here and I find it hard to do so. To the starting of the Sydney Bushwalkers as a protection society. They weren't the first, because before them there was the Mountain Traders Club, which started everything. Perhaps I'd better give some points about the Mountain Traders Club. So.
You mentioned another man too.
Yes, David D. Stead.
That's exactly the man.
David D. Stead probably was the first, what do I call him?
Conservationist?
Probably was the first important conservationist in Sydney, and he worked with his friends in a new building they had built called Science House in Harrington Street, which was very near the Roman Catholic Church. I think it was the one just off George Street, in a street that rises in stages right up to the top of the peninsula, the rocks. The street goes up in stages, and if you wanted to go up, you'd have to go up the stairs which mount each of these stages. And I think the church is St. Joseph's, I'm not sure, but it's only a few doors from George Street and the corner of another street which goes down to Pitt Street.
And what did David Stead do that was so important?
David Stead started his conservation work mostly with the New South Wales Fisheries. He was interested in the islands along the coast northward of Newcastle and What's the big bay?
Nelson's Bay.
Oh no, Nelson's Bay is only a part of it. Nelson's Bay is only a part of this big
Port Stephens.
Port Stephens, that's quite right. He was interested in the islands that lie in groups north of the entrance to Port Stephens. Now, Port Stephens Head, point perpendicular, I think it is, I'm not sure, is 700 or 800 feet high. And having looked at Port Stephens from way up the Karooga River, inland about 20 miles or more, there are no mountains to be seen anywhere towards the sea. And the only mountainous section are the two headlands. The North Headland of
Port Stephens.
Port Stephens, and the South Headland, which is two or three conical peaks following each other and directed towards, the run of them was directed towards Newcastle. Now, all around Port Stephens, there are no mountains. Pardon? But you see, the only mountainous part is around the heads. So Port Stephens is peculiar in that respect.
Mm.
Very peculiar. Now, I've been on the top of both, and I know what they look like from there, and I know that you can see a long way out to sea from the top of Port Stephens, which is over 700 feet high, somewhere between 700 and 1,000 feet high. I've forgotten the exact height. And you can see these other islands up there. Now, it was on those other islands up there further north that
David Stead
worked, because he was interested in the fisheries, the fisheries problem. And the fisheries department, or school of fisheries, whatever it was called, I'm not sure of the name, they looked to him as being their spokesman for the things that they thought would improve the fisheries matter for the people of New South Wales. It was quite a national matter, there's no doubt about that, because it had national significance.
Did David Stead's efforts raise people's awareness of conservation? Did it make people more aware that...
Oh, David Stead himself was undoubtedly a conservationist. He was one of the greatest, if not the greatest. As I said, he and his friends, I can't think of the names of his friends, but they worked in this science house. I think he and his friends were responsible for having Science House built, designed and built where it is in just above the most historic part of Sydney, just above can't think of the name of the street again. Anyway, it's not far from the quay. It's not far from Circular Quay. I suppose one could say that the most historic part of Sydney would be the east end of Circular Quay.
The rocks.
And I notice, no, the opposite direction.
Oh, yes.
The east end of Circular Quay.
Bennelong Point.
Is where the wool stores were.
Oh, yes.
All along under Government House. All along there.
Mm.
And that's where the bows of the big sailing ships went in over the road. Now, the bowsprits of these big sailing ships, don't forget, are as long as the foremast is high. A sailing ship, a three-master, square rigged, I don't mean schooners, and I don't mean kitches or anything like that. I mean the big ocean-going sailing ships with three masters, square sails. And the men, how they did, I don't know, but they usually worked with bare feet. And they clambered up the rigging and went along the rat lines, if they can call them rat lines, which went from intervals of about 4 or 5 feet, along the yard arms. Do you know what the yard arm is?
Yes.
Mm. The foremast has so many yard arms, the midmast, midmast, and the aftermast has one or two. And the midmast, and the aftermast, I forget now what you call it, has a flat sail, which is edge on, and assist in steering to some extent. Ah, now what can I do? I have described the fact that...
You were talking about David Stead. He seems to have influenced you a lot because of his efforts in conservation in the fisheries department.
Correct. He was right. I can't think of a department of the government which employed David Stead on the fisheries matter.
You were a young man when you met him, and he's obviously had an impact on you.
I was a very young man. I wasn't head teacher of architecture at the Sydney Technical College. I wasn't that old. I was that for 40 years. But I was well and truly entrenched, if you like. Work of what the clubs had followed. Could I put it this way? Could I put it this way that when Dunphy and his friends, numbering possibly 25, in...
How did you come to get together? How did you come to meet each other and know each other in the very beginning?
Because I and my friends wandered around the country and picked them up and met them in Sydney, and in 1927 we formed a bushwalkers club. But a lot of men and girls too, to some extent, but not many girls, very few, if any. That's the very start, because girls didn't do it.
No, I can understand that the times were against.
There was nothing wrong about it.
No.
It wasn't thought to be wrong, it was thought to be unhandy, if you like.
It wasn't done.
And it was thought that, up to a certain extent, it was thought that girls couldn't go into the rough country where the men went.
Mm.
And to a great extent that turned to be true, that proved to be true. Because, you see, there are lots of points about this matter. One is that if you take some fellows out, if one fellow, supposing he was an original mountain trader club man. There were no girls in the club, except those who were wives of some of the members. And now, as a matter of convenience, they went with their husbands, and they walked with him, with their husbands, walked with them, you see what I mean, for the duration of that particular trip. But the trips, to some extent, were curtailed to suit those girls.
Oh, yes, you had to modify the journey whenever they were
along. Yes, you see, there were certain parts of the country where you wouldn't dare take any women. You wouldn't take them at all because you'd understand that you are responsible for their safety.
Yes, it puts a big load on you, doesn't it?
It puts a big load on you. Mm. What is more, there are various duties too, which the girls couldn't avoid. Now, for instance, now, when the club called the Sydney Bushwalkers eventually joined the menfolk and went on long tours, one of them was way down that magnificent stream, the great one that goes into Victoria. What's the big river?
The Murray?
200 yards wide in places. 200 yards wide in places.
Murray?
Shoalhaven.
Oh, to Victoria.
Mm-hmm. Shoalhaven, that's right. The Shoalhaven is a large river.
Mm.
Now, one party that I went with, or led, if you like, that's right, we had to go down from towards
Kangaroo Valley.
Oh, no, Rowline, Southern Rowline. What are the big towns in the Southern Rowline? All together. There's a...
How far south?
Down the end, right down the end. There's nothing beyond. Nothing beyond.
Nowra?
No, that's Illawarra Line. Southern Line. Leaves Sydney and goes right down
Kanawha.
Up to...
Where?
Oh, gosh.
Cronulla.
Oh, no.
That's a southern line. Where are you?
No, up on the mountains. Oh, I've got them in my mind, but I can't think of their damn names. Wait, just a moment.
Kuma?
You're all right. Yeah, you're right. Kuma, what's the rest?
Tumut?
No. Kuma's right. Kuma's one of them. There's a big one, starts with S. And there's one called Bungendore or something, no? Oh, my memory's not what it used to be. Anyhow, those trips, I was going to tell you, I'm awfully...
This was a particular trip that the bushwalking group went on?
No, this is not a particular trip at all. This is a type of trip.
Oh, yes, sorry.
Which we'll put it this way, that when the Mountain Trails Club took on a type of walk, which went into fairly rough country, and I like to camp on parts like that, we discovered these places by going to those places, and we got into the country, our wives, whatever they were, would have to
You were mentioning the difficulties that women had on these walks.
Yes, I know. The main difficulties was what we saw on that big river I just told you about. You know?
Shoalhaven.
The Shoalhaven.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Well, now, there were three parties on that trip, all in one big gang, but they made three separate breakfast fires, three separate dinner fires, all of it. Now, how to explain it. What a near my fire. I let them go and I was sitting down because I was doing a bit of sketching. And I'm watching a tiger snake, about 40 feet away, and he's watching me. And he's sliding up and down, trying to make me up because I'm sitting still on the ground, making sure I haven't got my backside anywhere near a big black tunneling spider, black tarantulas, plenty of tarantulas about the country. They're here in fact. One tarantula last night went right across this table out of my trousers, these trousers, no bed trousers, and dropped down there, and I don't know where he went. I might be sitting somewhere near him now, I don't know. But he was one of those black tarantulas, and he came out of my trousers.
Mm.
Now that's what I don't like. I have one thing I hate is spiders in my trousers.
I can understand that.
You can understand that, can't you?
But you were sitting there watching this tiger snake.
And I was sitting there watching this tiger snake, and he was watching me because he didn't know what I was going to do. I knew what he was going to do. But I knew he wasn't going to come up where I was because he wasn't too sure about me. Because anyway, my friends were all away. Two females and three fellows or four fellows had all combined together, and they'd left their Christmas dinner cooking on their campfire, and I was sitting there not far away from their campfire, about 15 feet, and I'm watching this tiger snake down there. And he's watching me. See? Now, when that day blew over, these fellows came back and found their Christmas dinner was burned. I couldn't attend tiger snakes and burning Christmas dinner, so they burnt their Christmas dinner. Because while I was watching the snake, I forgot about their Christmas dinner, but then I wasn't put in charge of their Christmas dinner, so they lost their Christmas dinner. It burned.
Mm.
It burned.
Looks like you never heard the
but
end of it.
But they went away and never said to me, keep your eye on our Christmas dinner. Because I would have reckoned that was the trust and would have done it.
Mm-hmm.
And forgotten the snake or left the snake alone. But the snake was
preoccupying.
He was preoccupied. He wouldn't come past me, though. He knew he had a bit of common sense, that's name. Anyhow, when they all came back and apparently Christmas dinner had gone, they put something else on and had a meal. And then the girls and the fellows went down to the edge of the water, which I suppose meant dropping about 30 or 40 feet down over the rocks and so on to the water. And then they waded out into the river. The river there was about 200 yards wide. Well, easier, 200 yards wide. Now, when you wade in a river, a big river like that, and it's that wide, what you've got to watch out for is, it's horse experience, you've got to watch out that you don't fall into a hole. Because those big rivers are subject to rises and falls, according to the rainfall, see what I mean?
Mm.
Now, in their rising and falling, they create upward lifting currents of water, see what I mean?
Yes.
Same as air does the same, and they become like hellespots, do you know what I mean?
Mm.
That's not the right word, but...
Waterspouts.
Waterspouts, like that. They lift up, and as they lift up, they spread, you see, and go out all over the country, or over the waters. Now, when those people came back and they discovered they'd lost their tucker, they didn't say anything. They knew that that was so much. Well, had their stores, they put some more stores on, and they had their... I had nine with my mate. There was one fella, David somebody, I forget his name now. He was my particular mate for the trip. He and I worked our own tucker, and we didn't leave anything like that. He went with them on this trip, and I kept... No, he didn't. But he wasn't there watching that snake with me, so he must have been standing around about somewhere. At any rate, you go into the bush to enjoy it and to enjoy each other's company too. And I'm going to give you something else. I'm going to tell you what practically the last thing that happened to me in the Blue Mountains. And you mentioned Blue Gum Forest, didn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Right. I'm not going to start you on Blue Gum Forest or anything like that. I'm going to tell you what happened to me. The last time I went up in the Blue Mountains, and I walked right around from Katoomba, right through Medlow Bars, and I got around to that gun, which was a relic of the war, and then I came along Silfile, turned around, and I started to walk east, that's right along the edge of the cliff, and I came to a sign on the cliff which said, "The Lookdown," and I looked down. Well, it's a vertical cliff. And a question arose in my mind, how many years will it be before the hull of that cliff goes down in there? Like it did in another part of Katoomba.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's all down there now, over 100,000 tonnes of rock for a start. Anyhow, I couldn't find a solution to that, but it did enter my head. That it don't go to where that is, right? Well, while I was there, I had two mates with me, round about, and I said to them, "We are in the locality of Docker's Ladder, in the locality of Docker's Ladder." Well, to mention Docker's Ladder and see this view down into the Gross River, 2,000 feet below, is just balmy. You don't mention the two things in the same breath, so to speak. They're totally unlike each other. Now, I had two mates. They were liable with me to look how anything interesting at all would come under their notice. That's right. We all saw the lookout, the look down, they call it a look down, lookout. And you look straight across to Mount, what's the big top in the Blue Mountains? What's the biggest top in the Blue Mountains? Mount Banks,
yeah.
You look straight across to Mount Banks. You are dead opposite Mount Banks. Now, Mount Banks has 400 feet of cliff above you. 400 feet sheer cliff above you. Then you see the top of the mountain. Then you see the other attendant mountains going from east to west. That's right. But you can look at all that front. And I said to the boys, the fellows that called the boys, the fellows at the time, I said, "How about having a look for Docker's Ladder?" They said, "Right. What do we know about it?" I said, "Well, I know this, that. I expect to find something about Docker's Ladder. I don't know. I only know that Docker, it means Judge Docker, and he was interested in the Blue Mountains, this part of the Blue Mountains particularly, Blackie's part of the Blue Mountains particularly, and it's said that he got down to Gross River. It's said that he got down to Gross River. Judge Docker."
Well, we had no real particulars. Well, we're looking out across there and we see the great big top. We know they're 400 feet higher than us. Only the top was 400 feet higher than us. The cliffs went down and down and down and down until they become more or less the same height as the cliffs on our side. Then I said, I'm going to search around and see what I can see. I have Docker's ladder in mind. I have no idea where I'm going or anything at all about it. We've seen what we've seen here. I'm going around the corner now and I'm going to go south. But to do that, I've got to go up back again to where I was and go and circle around in order to get across the creek which goes over there and get gash down in the caves. I've got to muck around about there. I'm going to go up above until I get a higher run, and I'll walk across the other side, which I'll have to dip a bit, come up again on the top, and then go further along left where I couldn't go the other way, see what I mean? Couldn't go that way. So I went across that way, and they followed me, and I said, this is very interesting. We know that Docker was a judge. We know that he's very interested in Blue Mountain stuff around about this area and all the rest of it. I said, I don't know what I'm looking for. I don't know what Judge Docker's ladder is.
What period of time would this have been?
1935. Mm-hmm. That's that. I said, I don't know what Judge Docker's ladder is. I said, however, come with me. And they were led by me. And we went along the cliffs, and now we're going south, along the cliffs, facing all down there. Ooh. You know, if you're a hairy, scary type, and you're liable to get your head lift off the top of your head, you don't do these things. However, we were all pretty sensible, we knew what we were doing. And when we went along there, we came to a part where the rock stood up a bit. This is still going south, on the edge. We've turned a right angle, you see, in effect. Turn the right angle, we're going along south. And we come to the top of all these rocks. Now, when we reach these rocks, they're higher up than most other parts, and in order to see why they were higher up, we went up a bit on them and looked, and we found we were looking into a big cave-like depression in the top rim. You know the rim at all? In the top rim was there. And blow me tight, there were some bits of ladder down in there. Down in the bottom there were pieces of sawn wood which had been carted out on a cart somehow or other, or on horseback, but on a cart probably, some kind of cart carted it out. And they'd been used for some reason or other, and they'd all been left in there, and in intervening 10 or 15 years, whatever it was, they'd rotted. So you could, if you got down in there, you would find that wood was pretty well rotted. Well, we did get down. We found a way of getting around the edge, the nose of it, and we crawled into it. It wasn't what you'd call actually safe, but so we were kept. And we got into this depression, which was like a cave with no roof. And that's why the weather got in and rotted the wood, you see. Mm-hmm. So you could easily jump to the conclusion, that's Docker's ladder. Those bits of wood, those rotted wood could be Docker's ladder. Well, I thought to myself, they could be Docker's ladder. There's no roof on it to protect the stuff. It's 10 or 15 years since Docker was on the job. And we don't know what Docker's ladder actually was. We don't know what he did, where he went, or anything at all about it. We only know there's a place called Docker's ladder. Well, we're in a cave now. Now, we'll see what we can do about that cave. So the cave was an indication because it had those timbers there, you know. And there was several bits of all ends of rope. It was all from, you know, no good. The weather had been on all too long, too many years. If I said the weather had been on old dash thing for 15 years, I wouldn't be far wrong, I'm pretty sure. So we got around there, I don't know whether we went around the south part or whether we went around the north corner, but we got into the crack, which was the outfall of this cave, and walked in there. And it wasn't a proper floor, it was only rugged rocks. And we discovered that the bits of wood that were there were rotten. They were rotten, you couldn't use them for anything. I doubt if you could use them for firewood. I doubt if you could use them for firewood. Yet originally they had been sawn pieces of timber, like 3x2 or not as big as that, 2x1 perhaps, 2x1, perhaps 2x2, something like that. And all timber of that nature would have to be brought within Kooi, the place, on some kind of conveyance. But we don't know how many years ago. We can only suppose that it was Judge Docker in his spare moments. He and his boys, if he had any, were interested in you know, getting down to the Gross River, perhaps down to the Blue Gum Forest. Because after all, the Blue Gum Forest was a beautiful piece of timber, beautiful trees. And we had fellows who had come down the Gross. They were Sydney bushwalkers. They had come down the Gross and come out up into, I don't know which way they went, up north, where they came up south, into Katoomba, I'm not sure which, but they had reported back to our club that the growing timber at Blue Gum Forest was worth naming. It was beautiful. The timber was straight, and they were real blue gums. Because it was thought once that you couldn't get blue gums only in one place. But that was all my eye. It's a kind of timber, and the blue gums can be found wherever you find them. They're blue gums. And they certainly have a bluish tinge on the bark, that's right. They're clean barks, that's correct. Well, I'm trying to collect my memory. So, for no particular reason, only an apparent reason, we tried to get down to the Gross River from where we were on Gross Ladder. And we thought the start of Gross Ladder was where we found those bits of timber in that cave. Now that's how things are now, right now, present time. That's where they are now. Because before we'd finished with that time, or the next time I went out, which wasn't far off it, there was someone else out there, and they had something to do with the council. You see, we were mixed up with people who were up in the mountains, shall we say, exploring the mountains in various ways and so on and so forth. And there was somebody who was influenced by some of the caves who were attending the meetings. I might have been one before I know. And the meetings were being held in the, I think it was the Black Heath, or no, Katoomba had a building near the railway station there, which some of these clubs could arrange for the council, let them use as a meeting place, you know, mm-hmm. And we used to use it. And I'm not too clear, but this idea of coming right out around and seeing the look down and coming around still farther and getting into Docker's Ladder all led up to something which had been out of the long dim distance past, since us now we discovered there had been a Docker, a bloke named Docker, and he was a judge, and he must have had an idea of fancy for the Blue Mountains, and that was his locality out there.
He lived in Hat Hill Road.
He lived in Hat Hill Road.
I think I've heard some people who lived in Hat Hill Road when they were boys, they can remember the judge and his family getting all dressed up on a Sunday and getting into the fine carriage with the horses and going off to Mass every Sunday.
I see. Now, did he have a caretaker called Ottie?
I haven't.
Because on other trips, not that one, but once following this trip out there, I had to go in back to Katoomba, or the place before Katoomba, if you like, to get trained to go back to Sydney and home and work, see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of, I'm not the strongest bloke in the world. And on one particular occasion I got a bit sick and I couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't go along the road to get to the main road. When I got partly to the main road, I thought, oh, I can't do it. I can't get the train and get home. I'll have to get someone to help me here if I can. And I was feeling pretty sick. So I went over to this place. It's above all those falls, Blackie's Falls and all that up in there. And I locked this bloke up, and the main people weren't there, but their caretaker was a Mr. Ottie, O-T-T-I-E. And I explained the things to Mr. Oddy. He said, thank goodness you came. He said, I'm caretaker here for so-and-so and so-and-so. And I look after the house, that's my job. Now, I can do what I like. You are invited. If you're sick, I'll do what I can to look after you. You have, there's a room with a bed in it, which you can have. And if it satisfies you and pleases you, you stay the night with me. Stay the night with me. Use that room. And he took me in and showed me the room and the bed and all this. Everything's bonza. Beautiful.
Mm.
So I said, hey, this is made to order. But I want to talk to you. He said, that's right. He said, I want you to talk to me as much as you can, but not to strain yourself. So we sat down that night. He put the tuck in front of me, and it was well. And we talked desultorily. And he was keeping tabs on me, and I was keeping tabs on myself too, because I definitely wanted to sleep. And I definitely wanted to give him some talk, because that's why I was there, in a sense. Mm-hmm. He wanted to talk to somebody. He said so. And that was all right. So I went to sleep in due course after having had a talk with him all this way. Woke up in the morning, and I'm feeling very much better. And I walked along and got to the main road. Walked along till I got to either Katoomba or the one in front of Katoomba.
Nebebar.
They got on the train, I came back home. And I know that Margaret might have a better memory than me. She probably has. And I know that I couldn't go to work straight away at all. I had to stay home several days. That is to say, recovering, you see.
From this walk?
Yes, yes, mm. From this walk. Oh, I got sick on the walk, you see.
I see.
That's right. Well, that's what the father's got to put up with.
Mm.
Well, that's no good, but you've got to put up with it when you get it.
While you were down that end of the world in Blackheath, did you ever hear of a man called Murphy who used to live out
Murphy.
There near Hat Hill? He lived out there in a little hut on his own.
Oh, I don't know that. Now, that's interesting.
Yes.
Out towards Hat Hill.
Out, right near the bottom of Hat Hill he lived, old Murphy.
Now, wait a minute, Hat Hill. I know where Hat Hill is, yes. I used to go past Hat Hill to get to this other place.
Perry's Look Down.
That's right.
And Anvil Rock, which you were standing
that's
on.
That's right, Anvil
Rock's
the one that was tipped over, so I heard. That's right, Anvil Rock was tipped over, that's right. Tipped over and done right down at the bottom. I've never met anybody who had ever seen Anvil Rock since. If it was tipped over down below, it must have been tipped over and got into a crevice and people haven't seen it.
Anvil Rock is gone, is it?
Anvil Rock was on top on a proper stand. And that I was told that some idiots. What do you call these fellows? Yahoos?
Vandals.
Vandals, that's right. I tipped it over.
Oh, no, I didn't know.
Oh, you know about Anvil Rock?
I've been there.
Yes, Anvil Rock.
You can drive to Anvil Rock now.
You can drive close to it.
You can drive to it now and walk right up onto the top of it.
Oh, I see.
I believe.
Oh, I see. Well, in my days, you couldn't do that. You'd have to walk onto it.
That's right.
And then a little way past that, you're working at the big fellow.
Banks,
that's right. And then come down still, then turn right angle corner and you come to this docker's ladder. Anyhow, we found that we could get into this open head top cave, and we found we could work down those rocks below what you might call it docker's cave, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was either that trip or another trip doing that, somebody came in, and I think they were from the council. I'm not sure. Anyway, he had steps about 15 inches long and about 1 1/4 inches thick, all cement, cast in cement, and about 6 inches wide, like that. And he had a cart somewhere up the top, I couldn't see the cart, but it was somewhere up on a level above me. And he'd brought them from some place or other, and he seemed to be in a hurry and all this, and I didn't get much of a chance to talk to him at all. So I said, what are these going to go? He says, they're to help in the doctor's ladder idea. But he couldn't tell me what the doctor's ladder idea was. And I didn't have time to talk to him, to ask him, seek his approval about what doctor's ladder was. I and my two friends were then trying to find a way down Docker's Ladder, so-called, whatever it was, down in the mouth, down the junction of Gross River and the creek that comes round from Katimba. I can't think of that creek.
Gubbets?
I think it's Gubbets Creek. There is a branch of Gubbets Creek, anyhow. The branch is called Gubbets Creek.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't come down any climbing down the rocks and Gubbets Leap with them, but not that. Never, at any time. That's too dangerous. Too dangerous. However,
did you ever abseil on any of your walking trips?
Abseil? Mm. No, I wouldn't have time for that.
Mm.
Well, I can't climb, I want to do.
Fair enough.
No, there's plenty of other places where you can get down, but I wouldn't abseil for anybody. Now, down at Gubbets Leap Way, in the Gubbets Leap area, there's a place where you're supposed to abseil. But now, the point about abseiling is that whose rope are you using?
Mm.
How old is it? How long has it been out in the open air? Is it deteriorated or not?
Got to trust your equipment, haven't you?
Well, you don't trust your equipment. You're damn fool if you do, because you lose a lot.
Mm. Now, that's the abseiler's attitude, though. You must trust your equipment. As soon as you do that, you can go anywhere.
Oh, yes, but then you've got to make sure that your equipment is all right.
Mm. Oh, of course.
Yes. Now, there's another place, not in the Blue Mountains at all. Oh, it's way down south. It's not in Illawarra. No. Oh, I can't think of it. I'll think of it later on, some other time. Rope, you know, proper rope man in Sydney, down there, Sussex Street. New rope. 20 feet or 3/4 inch through rope. Good stuff. We've got it. And bound the two ends up, it was all right, so they couldn't unwind. And that could be used as a hauling rope. And I took it out to this place is outside. You know where Hilltop is? You know the first town on the southern line? First town on the southern line.
No, I'm
it's sorry. On the railway. No, I forgot the name of it.